Yeah.
You're listening to Dig Deep on KAXE KBXE. Actually, this is just the iTunes version because it's our podcast only. We've been talking about District 8. It's one of the most watched congressional races in the nation, like one percentage point between the candidates.
Very close.
Yeah.
Joe Radinovich and Pete Stauber. And we wanted to,
start with some confessions.
Yep, bring it on.
I realize we're in an era of, whether it's Me Too or whether it's, other things where people are forced to confront things in their past that are uncomfortable. I'm going to admit to the two of you today and anyone that's listening that I have had parking tickets in the past, lots of parking tickets. When I was a student at the University of Minnesota, I used to, and I'm not proud of this, but I wasn't used to paying for parking. I'm from the north, not from the big city, So I would park where I wanted and I would get parking tickets. I had a favorite lot that I would park in. It was the teacher's lot. And you laugh, you're the professor. At night, the professors weren't there and I had this one evening class and I would go and I would park there. And I would get ticket about one out of every four times. And I'm, an engineering student. I can do math.
Cost of doing business.
It was actually cheaper to pay the parking ticket than it was to pay for parking. If you got it at a rate of like one of every four times. If it became like one of every two, that was more like break even. And so there was some economic analysis here. But I was breaking the law. And I was willful in breaking the law. Now I'm gonna go a little bit deeper with this. I actually got my license suspended for unpaid parking tickets I came home from school and walked in the door and my dad, the law and order Democrat, my dad stood there and he's like, we got to have a talk, son. He had gotten a notice from the Hennepin County Sheriff that my license had been revoked for non-payment of parking tickets. This is not how we live. This is not how we conduct ourselves. Shame. You brought shame upon our family. And I had to go down to the courthouse and resolve these. Not only was it a parking ticket, but then it was an after-the-fact fine and all these things. Here's what I discovered, and this was really like unfortunate that I discovered this at such a young age. If you go in with, say, $200 worth of parking tickets and then back fines and all this stuff, and you have 40 bucks in your pocket and you express contrition and say like, I got 40 bucks and that's really all I've got. They will actually let you pay all of your fines with the $40 you have in your pocket. And they'll, call it even.
Oh, really?
Oh, you can negotiate with the judges. Yeah. No, you absolutely can negotiate these things. So me being who I am, this was a license to actually park illegally.
Only
even
the
more.
Beginning of the criminal empire.
No, it's one of these things where like, you say like you're not a criminal going into jail, but then when they get to jail, it makes you a criminal. As soon as I entered the criminal justice system, I actually became more criminal in nature because now I realized that I could park wherever I wanted, ring up like huge fines, and I could go in and just because I had the ability to talk nicely to a judge. And would bring like a modest amount of cash in my pocket. And I was a college student, so I could legitimately say like, I don't have a lot of money. They would let you off. I mean, I raised like $180 in fines for like 20 bucks. It's really easy to do. It's not a courtroom. You're sitting in like a little office room with a judge. You explain to them like, I'm a student. I'm in the army at the time. I'm like running back and forth. I'm trying to make ends meet. I parked in the teacher's lot and there were no teachers there. So I wasn't taking anyone's spot, but it was, they came and they're like, oh, I understand. You're trying to get on track in life. And so I,
didn't they notice the repeat?
No, because it's a volume business for them. And plus, if they can get 40 bucks from you today, that's way better than chasing after you for years with collection agencies and not, collecting a tiny percentage. So their whole thing is about like clearing cases. Like they're like, you're in here showing contrition, accepting responsibility and willing to pay something. Like we'll do that. We're all about that. So, when I was a student, I was basically like a criminal. And I think not only does that, reflect poorly on me today, it probably makes me unfit not only for public office,
right?
But it makes me unfit for this show, I think.
Yeah. Yeah,
I just want to apologize to you because I feel good now that I've gotten this off.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the strange thing. So I also went to the University of Minnesota. I was kind of a commuter student. I paid for parking every damn time.
You were a sucker.
So,
I'm feeling like that. I know one lot on the West Bank where I would do that at night, but I didn't do it often enough.
If Chuck's unfit to serve,
yes,
I must admit, so am I.
Well, now
because
all right.
City of Hibbing, when I lived there, we had a one-stall garage and two cars, and I had so many, I mean, calendar parking tickets were my version of a convenience fee for leaving my car on the street when I didn't want to change the sides of the street. It wasn't snowing. There wasn't going to be any plowing, and I would just take those tickets. They'd come every other week or third, and they were at the time $7-$8, and it was nothing to me. I don't know how many of those I got.
But you paid him?
I paid him, but I didn't change my behavior at all.
Right.
And I think...
You tried to fight the man.
Yeah.
And you lost.
I got a parking ticket when I went to school in Dubuque, Iowa, and I was leaving Iowa forever. I have yet to be back to Dubuque, Iowa, but I did not pay this ticket, and I wrote park this with an exclamation point on the ticket and tacked it to my corkboard for the next 15 years.
I have to say, I was in Dubuque, Iowa not too long ago.
Is my picture still
there's up? There's a wanted poster of Aaron Brown there.
Oh, gosh. Not only did I park in pay lots, but if I did get a parking ticket, I paid it.
Well, you're fit for office, Heidi. You're
No, you're you know what you are? You're female. You're a responsible, upstanding member of society. And I, you know, Aaron and I are clearly... Yeah. Of that delinquent class.
Right.
Not to mention the many speeding tickets I've gotten and other things as well.
What was the guy's name? The Jangle or something like that from North Dakota who got in that horrible crash.
The governor, the former governor.
Yeah, got in that terrible crash
and
killed someone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on the campaign thing, and it was horrible. I mean, it was really, really, someone died. And then it came out that he had like 8 speeding tickets and the media just said like, oh, the horror, like, look at this person has such a huge problem. They have 8 speeding tickets. At the time, like I know in my record, like I think I have like 15 speeding tickets. Like, I have a lot. I haven't got one for a long time, but for years I would do planning and engineering work in small towns, like all over the state. And these meetings, I would be driving home at 11, 12 at night. And every small town in Minnesota has this point on the edge of town where like the speed limit goes to 45, but the highway doesn't change at all. Like nothing has changed about the road at all. But all of a sudden it becomes 45. And at night, the cops sit out on the edge of town and just pull people over. And that's their like way of getting drunk drivers and stuff. I would say I got a ticket about a third of the time. I had a streak there where if I was wearing a tie, I wouldn't get a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And if I wasn't wearing a tie, I would. But I mean, I had like a horrible driving record in terms of speeding. And it was always like, you know, 55 and a 45 or 60 and a 45 or something like that. It was in that transition zone and they would just nail me like all the time. I have this like abject fear that someday I will be in the public eye for some reason and do something wrong. And they'll say, well, look at the recklessness of this man, total disregard for the law.
Maybe we should put our confessions in context for why we're talking about our
District 8. Yes.
For District
8. Do you have speeding tickets though?
I got speeding tickets. I've got at least 4 and a lot of warnings, including some recent warnings that were merciful beyond belief. That I got a warning for one of the... I was going really fast one time because I was in a backroads... And what happens in the backwoods is sometimes there's these party guys out there with their trucks that are sitting up super high and they put their super flashers on, like the flashlights behind you, and it's like, this guy gets right up in my bumper. And so I sped up And he kept up with me. This is you see where this is going?
Yeah. Totally.
It was a sheriff's pickup truck.
Oh boy.
And I got pulled over for trying to evade. Well, he didn't call it that. When I explained what was going on, he understood. But on the other hand, he could have not understood, and I would have a really serious fine from this particular incident. And this is stuff that happens in the woods of Minnesota and in traveling the state, especially people like Chuck and to a lesser extent me, who travel a lot. And we're talking about this because one of the big issues, in fact, if you talk Joe Blow voter about the 8th District, they're probably talking about the negative ads against Democrat Joe Radinovich by an outside group hitting him for committing crimes. And the crimes, when you go into the fine print, are a large number of parking tickets from his time when he worked in Minneapolis for the mayor of Minneapolis during his campaign. And that led to a suspended license, just like Chuck described earlier, and unpaid fines, which got sent to collections, which was also in the ad. And then he turned against the stop sign, or he committed some moving violation, got pulled over, got a ticket for that, and a ticket because he had some kind of marijuana pipe in the back seat or something. And that is a drug paraphernalia charge, which was dismissed, but nevertheless was charged. And this was during a time when his mother had just died and he was, you know, trying to make
and
sense
died
of...
died tragically.
Tragically,
yeah,
it was a horrible situation.
Well, yeah, anytime you're a young person and your parents die, it's horrible. But you add on the complexities of that. Yeah,
I'm not saying it excuses illegal behavior.
No.
What I'm saying is, I know a lot of people who have gone through hard times in life and had struggles with.
But I know a lot of 17-year-olds that have drug paraphernalia that are not actually doing drugs, right? You know,
right? Well, and true. And there's that, and there's also, you know, he's a kid, and this kids try stuff like this, and sometimes they don't stop. But Joe Radinovich doesn't. He did stop, and he
right. There's
he
no allegation today that Joe Radinovich is a drug.
Yeah, there's he's turned his life around. He's served in the state legislature. He's different. He mentors people. He's different than he was, like most of us, different than when we were teenagers. Now, I'm not, that sounds like I'm defending Joe, and I am. But this kind of brings to light the two big issues that people have been talking about are the quote unquote reckless behavior of the unfit for office Joe Radinovich, and then the insidery email allegations against Pete Stauber, in which he apparently used his county commissioner email address to correspond with national Republicans regarding his campaign and other strategy related things, using his email address as an elected commissioner of St. Louis County. That has been another issue that we've been talking about a great deal as well. And I'm glad Chuck was as honest and open as he was, because I think it is something we all identify with, because I am really frustrated with this campaign. Not because my guy's getting raked over the coals with this charge. You expect some negative ads. I expected some, you know, trying to hit him on mining. We talked about that. Maybe immigration. We talked about that. That's part of business. But taking these things that are, you know, fairly insignificant and making them sound like the grand criminal source of all problems in our society, it makes it really hard to imagine anybody passing muster running for office.
I think that's the part that has really bothered me. A few years ago when Al Franken was running for re-election, and I can't remember who he was running against, but
Mike McFadden.
Okay, they had an ad of Franken like acting like he was talking, he was like doing this.
Oh, that was
like
the first one. That was when he ran against,
I think that was against Coleman.
Against Norm Coleman. Yeah.
And they basically were trying to frame it as like Franken's out of control. Like, you know,
he's nuts.
He's crazy.
Yeah.
He's nuts. And then the Franken campaign, like, okay, that's the way you want to play it. And they showed that ad, and then they actually showed like his statement, and it was him describing an interaction he'd had with Paul Wellstone. And he was mimicking like the actions of Paul Wellstone. And it was a beautiful, like tearjerker kind of story. And I think it backfired on Coleman in like, in a way that at the time I'm like, you know, that you actually deserve that at that point. Mm-hmm. Like if you're willing to distort what someone is or says, like debate the issues. Come on. Like, why are you going so far to paint this person as someone that they're not? Like, I'm fine voting against Al Franken because I don't agree with him on the issues. With this Radinovich stuff, it really, really bothers me because I said this when we did the live show a few months ago. Our district is going to be inundated with outside PAC money. This is not the Stauber campaign doing this. And if you said there's coordination that's going on, you know, two levels below the scene, maybe that happens on campaigns. Stauber's campaign is I've not seen them try to exploit this personally, but they haven't had to. It's been out
they,
there. And
they,
it's,
they don't need over, to. No, yeah. They can it's just better to not talk right. about it. Yeah.
But this outside money coming in and doing this, distorts our election, like our ability to have a mm-hmm. discussion on our issues. Second, I do think that it has this, let's please not talk about Judge Kavanaugh today and all that. That's going on right now as we speak. So I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
But I feel like we're entering into a period of time, and Kavanaugh's maybe not the right way to have this conversation, but there's a part of me that like fears for who among us will step forward, mm-hmm. you know? And there's a certain, you know, like, you know, Jesus and Luke, like let them among us who was without sin cast the first stone. We're not even talking about sin here. I mean, we're talking about like
parking tickets.
Yeah. Like,
which I guess is sin in a form.
Yes. Yeah. Are we going to take this and allow it to become a character distortion thing where a person like Joe Radinovich, who I don't agree with on many, many policies, but who is a nice, like decent man who's actually tried to do like good things with his life. His life story, whether he's Democrat or Republican, is an admirable one that we should honor and actually promote as like, this guy's one of us. Are we going to allow outside money to destroy that? And I think the answer is yes, like mm-hmm. we are. And that just makes me sad for humanity.
I've fielded a lot of emails and calls from just people I know, friends, not super engaged with politics. They're like, what's up with the parking tickets and Radinovich, you know, what's up with that? You know, like it's become the most important thing. And as we just in this series discussed three issues that are arguably very important issues to people in the district in this series that we just talked about. And I find it very difficult to find anybody talking about those issues right now because they're talking about what's on TV, you know?
Well, I've had people ask me about both of you, why you aren't running for office. Does that play into it a little bit? I know, Aaron, at one point in your life, you thought you wanted to run for office. And I
really?
We've had some messages on our talkback line that say, just Chuck, run for office.
What about me?
No, I would be a horrible person running for office.
Because of the parking tickets?
Because of the parking tickets, yeah. No, I think that there are some people who are really good at it and some people are not. I tend to, I think I'm very maybe good at this. But being good at being like a pundit or a commentator is like way different than being good at, talking to broad mm-hmm. constituencies and not like ticking everybody off. People cut you a lot of slack when you're a commentator and they're like, yeah, I don't agree with him on that. But then, but I like what he's saying over here. But when you're a politician, it becomes very different and polarizing.
The rules become a little tougher.
What about you, Aaron? Because you did at one point. Yeah, I
when I was in my 20s, I as passionately as I wanted anything, I wanted to run for the legislature and run for governor. And I signed my yearbook. God help me. I signed my yearbook, see in the governor's office for the reunion or in the governor's mansion. You know, I was a cocky little bastard. And I wanted to be a politician very badly. I wanted to save the world in the classic sense. And I was really involved with politics. And I still believe a lot of the things I believed then. I still have a hopeful heart and I still want to see the world get better. But something happened. My life changed. And part of it was kind of settling down with my wife and family. And then because I had such a front row seat to how politics worked, and a good friend of mine did get elected to the legislature, and I helped and worked with him very closely. So it's almost like I'm sitting up in northern Minnesota, but I got a daily report on what was happening, really happening in St. Paul, and really happening at those events that happen out in the woods, and the soirees and the parties, and how everything, you know, all the stuff involved in the lobbyists that hang out. I got a real close picture of that. And I'm not saying that I would never get involved to make things better, but it seemed like the skills I had, and Chuck said something that's very true, which is being good at what we're doing right now is different than being a politician. And there are some overlaps. Saying things nicely and being good at giving a speech is obviously a skill that's very important. But it's a lot of relationships, maintenance of relationships, a lot of social energy expended to be on all the time, to be able to deal with people who are upset with you in a way that doesn't turn them off forever. Even if you have to disappoint someone, you have to not lose them as a supporter, keeping coalitions together that are always shifting and changing. I'm not saying I couldn't do all that, but I realized that in my life and with my relationship with the sin of pride, I needed to consciously control that by keeping a distance from that side of the business. And I find that I am an effective change agent as a writer and as a person who does things in my community. And I feel like looking at my community, that's where my time is better spent.
I was in, I can't remember what the famous church in London is. Not St. Paul's, but the place where all like the famous people are buried. Someone's yelling it right now at mm-hmm. the radio. I've been there a couple of times. And when you go through, it's like this king, this queen, like this person, and they're all like have these big titles and they're really important. And then at one point, there's like this thing in the wall, this little like crypt where like some dude is stuffed in, and it says like assistant to the king or something, mm-hmm. like that's his title. And I look at that and I'm like, that's me. That's me. Like, I don't want to be like the king. Like, I don't want to be that guy. But you know who ran the place is mm-hmm. that dude right there. It's like he had all the mm-hmm. ideas. He had all the like things mm-hmm. that's that dude. And I would rather be like that dude than the mm-hmm. one everybody, you know, and that's just me.
Getting back though to the notion of who's going to run for these offices if people's lives are going to be dragged through. I've got various things, you know.
I'll give you one name.
Who's that?
Trump. Someone yeah. who doesn't affect.
Right. Someone who is so much.
We'll see.
We'll see. Gravity may one day take effect on the president. You don't think so?
No. And it won't.
That's a whole other
strengthens,
issue.
Maybe that's strengthens
next month. Yeah. Midterm elections next month.
Well, but even that even a loss in the midterms won't necessarily yeah. stop what he does. You know, his business is surviving anything. That's his business. That said, like looking at the local level, what I see more of is the quote unquote real people who may have had challenging or difficult times. You know, most people in life, if you talk to people, what do people go through? They go through divorces. They go through medical problems. They maybe made bad choices. They might, you know, you add up who's got DUIs and who's been through a divorce and who's been, maybe got in trouble in school, and you add up all this stuff and it ends up being most people have at least one of those things that have happened to them. And it gets to be kind of hard to find people who are squeaky clean, pure all the way through, who have never done anything wrong. And at some point, if you're telling young people who are like I was, who was super fascinated and interested in politics and wanted to be involved in it, if you're telling them that they've got to, you know, thread some needle of behavior and of never ever saying anything outrageous or that wouldn't fit the party mold in a primary 10 to 20 to 30 years from now, and taking no chances on anything to become this pure white light of candidacy, the problem is you get what we're getting a lot more of, which is sociopaths. And I don't want to like pick on...
I'm totally with you. Yes.
People, and I'm not saying it's just the other side. Both sides have... And I say it makes it sound bad calling them sociopaths. It means people who want to be what people want them to be. And
they don't have the they process the world in a very different way.
Right. And the, as a result, we get a lot of very inflexible people who are trying to become a pure version of something in their mind, an ideal of some sort, and are not willing to deal with the complexities of other people and other points of view in any sort of real way. And if you look at Congress, especially Congress, which is the worst of, I mean, the legislature still has some real people in it, but Congress, if you go in a real person, it's real hard to come out a real person, because you have to navigate what Radinovich and Stauber are navigating right now, which is these kind of weird elections based on the base and negative ads and raising a ton of money and surviving an assault of the senses that is really just trying to get people not to vote at all. And if you survive that and become a member of Congress, then you join 400.
Congratulations.
You've
yeah.
become one of 435 people who are jaded, weird, cooked up in a lab of people of one side or the other who, you know, the only people who can take chances are the ones from from very partisan districts who will never take chances. And the people who want to take chances are the swing seat people who can't because they don't survive. And so it's this weird, destructive environment. Everybody, like Rick Nolan, a classic example, or any people who I might have had some respect for who went there, they come back saying, God, it's really terrible. It's become really terrible there. And they don't last long, you know. And that's a destructive environment. And I'm not saying that, you know, the things people are accused of are always, like, maybe some, you know, if you lost a family member to a speeder, our discussion may sound a little glib. And,
right.
and you know what? I'm sorry if that's the case, because these are laws for a reason, you know.
Right.
But on the other hand, in the big perspective of human life where people make mistakes, there is no capacity for a human being to make a mistake and survive in politics in the environment we're in. And I think that's a troubling thing, because we end up getting people who learn to lie about who they are and what they might believe. And I think we see that with the Trump era. A lot of people are concerned about some of the things the president's doing or saying, and they'll say it privately, but publicly they've all got their public positions to take, and they don't deviate from that because of this weird world that we live in.
I kind of, like, for me, like a closing thought, if you look at, like, progressive narratives over the years in regards to rehabilitation of criminals, the idea that, you know, we should have a system that's less about punishment and more about bringing people back, there's a certain, like, inherent notion that there's a better angel inside of us that can come out. And, you know, that you're really kind of defined by not only your hardships in life, but some of the mistakes that you make and can overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the really positive things that left of center thinking has brought to this country is the idea of second chances, the idea of, like, a rigid order and hierarchy of things. If you screw up, you're done. You know, it is not a way to look at things. And I'll say this, and I realize I'm saying this in a really charged environment. If you did something when you were 17 years old and you've lived, you know, 33 decades after that with, like, you know, I don't know, having repented or changed or had regrets about that or what have you, should that, like, disqualify you from everything else, you know, from this point forward? I think that notion goes against traditionally what, like, Democrats have stood for. I'll say for conservatives, Christianity is and I'm talking about Christian conservatives now. I realize there's conservatives of many different stripes, but conservatives who identify as Christians, a core value of Christianity is forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is a central tenet of Christianity. You are a sinner, and your God has forgiven you for no good reason of anything that you have done other than you exist. I feel like right now we've entered into this crazy world where, for very, like, short-term reasons, we are not only prepared to look past the humanity of individuals, but we're actually kind of demanding a certain sociopathic response to everything, where we expect our elected people to be avatars of something that they're just not. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a really bad way to govern, and it's a really bad way to live. You know, why would I never want to run for office? I don't want to be an avatar. Like, I want to be a real person, and I'm happy having my life reviewed and introspected and all that by you, by people listening to this. Like, I would be happy to talk about anything in my life. I have a lot of regrets and a shame over certain things. But I also think that I've grown and changed and become a better mm-hmm. person. I would not want that put through the prism of the insanity, mm-hmm. which is like our current sociopathic avatar election process. And it does break my heart a little bit that this is happening to Joe Radinovich, not because I have like any massive empathetic outpouring towards him, but because I think we need people like Joe Radinovich to run for office. I think we need Republican versions of Joe Radinovich. I think we need DFL versions of him. I think we need independent versions of him. I think we need people like that stepping forward. And if this is what happens to them, shame on us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we'd love to know from you. Do you have questions you think we should discuss? Send them our way. You can send an email to comments@kexe.org, or you want to, give any sort of feedback to what these gentlemen have said here today. We'd also love to hear from you. This is Dig Deep on KEXE, KBXE.